Hello, Dog Nation, and welcome into another episode of Dog Nation Preseason here. I am not Kaylee Manziel. My name is Connor Riley. Kaylee is on vacation this week, which means that I am flying solo. And with that in mind, we're going to just jump right into our first topic here. The SEC announced on Wednesday of this week that their 2025 schedule will be a repeat of the 2024 schedule. The only difference being, of course, that the road games in 2024 will be home games in 2025, and the home games in 2024 will be road games in 2025. So what does all that mean for Georgia? Well, I think, and I feel comfortable saying this, this is one of, if not the best home schedules that Georgia will have ever had. We start with the Texas game. I think that's the big one that jumps out first. In the 130 plus years that Georgia has been playing football, never has Texas come to Athens. And so to get that home game, to get that kind of environment where, look, Texas, are they back or not? I would say they are pretty clearly back right now, having made the college football playoff last year, joining the SEC, some seeing them as a potential playoff team, potential SEC champion once again. Regardless of what Texas is, regardless of what Georgia is, that is going to be a massive, massive game. And the fact that you are getting that in your home stadium in a game that, quite frankly, you think of the great home games in Kirby Smart's time here, Notre Dame in 2019 jumps to mind. I think the high watermark is still the 2022 Tennessee game, and the Texas game will be tough to top that day. But the Texas game is going to have a shot to do that if Georgia and Texas continue to line up and win games as they are projected to do so. I think the fact that you have the 2024 game already built in whatever the result from that game will have some carryover into 2025. But the fact that you are getting that game alone, I think makes this schedule a win for the Georgia fans out there. I know there are some that will want to go see Georgia play at Texas A&M. There might be some that want to see LSU, Oklahoma. Those are all understandable points, but we don't get a lot of firsts at this point in time anymore under Kirby Smart. You know, they've won back-to-back national championships. They've signed number one recruiting classes. So to get a first, in this case, Texas visiting Georgia in 2025, and we don't have dates for these games yet. Those will come much later. But the fact that we're getting that, I think, is a big win for Georgia. Smile Munden was asked last week, you know, are there any games that you're looking forward to this season? And the first one that he listed, it was actually that Texas game, and that's going to be at Texas. Now, Smile won't be around to play Texas because he is going to be a senior this season, but I think the fact that the Texas gaming, the trip to Austin stands out, should make that 2025 game all the bigger. Here's Smile talking about the excitement of wanting to play Texas.
I guess games that stand out, maybe one would be like Texas, I guess just because they haven't been in the SEC, right? And then I can't remember. Well, I do remember the last time Georgia played Texas. It was about the Sugar Bowl one time. Yeah. So it's been a while since they, like, you know, actually played. So I'm just really excited for that, man.
Were you here when George played at Alabama last?
Nah, that was my senior year of high school.
Which I think that's an excellent transition to the last time that Georgia played Alabama in Athens. I was still in college. Came back in 2015. It was not a very fun day. It was a very wet day. And Georgia, with Kirby Smart on the opposing sideline, still as a defensive coordinator at Alabama, won 38-10 in a game that, quite frankly, wasn't even as close as that score indicates. And so the fact that you're getting that game at home, I think, is just another reason to ultimately be excited about this home slate. And the fact that you're getting both of those games together, quite frankly, look, we've suffered through, I think, some lackluster home slates with the state of the SEC East in recent years. And you can even look at the chatter going into last year with what Georgia's schedule was on paper. There are a lot of critics about the teams that Georgia was going to play. Now, ultimately, the schedule works out to where you do play a big game against Missouri and Athens at the end of the year. That Ole Miss game was an electric atmosphere, and Ole Miss ultimately finishing as a top 10 team. They'll come to Athens once again in that 2025 schedule. But there are still some complaints out there, and I think people want to see a different schedule. You want to see and play all these teams. But at the end of the day, I just think it was easy, simple, and clean to flip the schedule in that sense. And knowing in 2026, when there could be an expanded playoff, when there could be different things, when we have at least some data points of what the SEC looks like in a 12-team playoff, I think that's when you potentially see the league expand to 9 games there. I think eventually you are going to see Georgia play at Texas A&M. Consider the fact that Texas A&M joined the league in 2012, and Georgia has still not made a football trip to College Station. In that same time, Florida will have played at Texas A&M four different times. So you can understand why the folks down in Gainesville aren't exactly thrilled with this setup. But I think if you're a Georgia fan, and most of the people I am talking to here are, this is great news. The fact that you get two massive home games, Texas and Alabama, is great. The fact that you potentially see Brock Vandergriff, who could be, well, the starting quarterback at Kentucky, coming back to Georgia, I think could be great there. But the Vandergriff point also maybe sort of illustrates why we shouldn't get too out in front of our skis here. There's so much turnover in college football on a year-to-year basis. It's impossible at this point to predict who is going to be on the roster and who won't be moving forward. Just this year alone, Georgia is going to have 35 new scholarship players, be it transfers, seven of which Georgia brought in via the transfer portal this season, or 28 scholarship freshmen. Georgia's going to see their fair share of turnover with guys going on to the NFL draft or leaving via the transfer portal themselves. And so before anyone starts wondering about what those games might ultimately look like, I think it's important to heed the words of Kirby Smart here as he talks about, you know, the youth and the youngness of this roster, just not so much in terms of raw age, although for obviously recruits it is, but just the newness of playing at Georgia and the atmosphere that comes with that. So here's Kirby Smart talking about the challenges of having a new and fresh-faced roster every year.
As a whole, the overall feels probably a little younger than what I remember in the past. Maybe it's the total number of new players in terms of mid-years. I think we're up a little bit in mid-years. We've broken that record every year with more and more mid-years. And then the addition of the portal guys. So it's just a lot of new faces out there.
So you hear the new faces, and look, there are some people that have brought up, oh, Missouri and Ole Miss have favorable schedules this year. They're going to have favorable schedules again next year. I think teams are going to change so much, as is going to be the case every year in college football now. The schedules are going to look drastically different in terms of the quality of opponents on a year-in, year-out basis from 2024 to 2025. But the fact alone that Georgia gets marquee games against Texas and Alabama is ultimately why the SEC was right, at least from a Georgia perspective, in keeping these games. You also get a road trip to Auburn. I know a lot of people out there see Tennessee as a rival as well. So to keep those games on the schedule, I think should satisfy just about everybody. So that's our first sort of opening monologue there a bit. We're going to move on. Spring practice observations. We are through the first real week of spring practice here, Thursday. This will be their fifth practice of the spring today, and depending on when you're watching this, it'll probably have already been completed. And on Saturday, Georgia will have its first scrimmage. So, you know, they've been in pads twice already. They'll likely be in pads again this coming Saturday. And there are some things that we've gone ahead and learned. And I think the first one, as you see there on the lower third, it's the outside linebacker position to me, and for a number of different reasons. We got a chance to talk to Mykel Williams to open things up, and we've seen both Mykel bouncing back and forth between outside linebacker and defensive end. Saw Joseph Jonah-Ajani do that as well with him. Jalen Walker is a guy that's going to play outside linebacker once again for Georgia this coming season, but we know his main home comes at that inside linebacker spot, and so this spring he's really focused on playing there a good bit more. But it's also time to maybe sort of acknowledge the players that are in that room on a down-by-down basis. Chaz Chambliss is coming back as a very veteran and experienced starter, and while he may not have the pass-rushing prowess that some other players do, he's a guy that Georgia knows it can count on a down and an early down segments and stopping the run. But it's really some of the other guys in that room, specifically Damon Wilson, that I'm really interested in seeing how he continues to develop this spring. Getting a chance to watch Damon at practice, we've seen him noticeably bulked up, and in certain packages, we've seen him running with the first team. A meniscus injury ended his season prematurely as a freshman, but he's back full strength this spring. And so as we hear Chaz Chambliss talk about him, I'm really interested as we continue to see Damon Wilson in his development, as he came in with a lot of hype as a five-star freshman out of Florida.
You know, I think physically he's grown a lot this offseason. You know, last year he weighed 230. This year he's weighing 240. Putting more muscle on his frame, you know, obviously allows him to do more stuff in the run game. Being able to set more edges, you know, mentally he's been able to take what we do as a defense and, you know, expand his mind to not just pass rush, but also coverage and in the run game doing stops.
Georgia's defensive front wasn't as ferocious as it was in either 2021 or 2022. And I think just the youth at outside linebacker played a factor in that. With three 2022 signees, Marvin Jones Jr., Darius Smith, and CJ Madden all transferring out of the program, it's a young position once again. That's why we've seen Mykel Williams, Jalen Walker, Joseph Jonah-Ajani all taking reps there. But if this Georgia defense is going to reach its ceiling this coming year, it's going to need players like Chaz Chambliss, Damon Wilson, and Sam Mpemba all to sort of live up to their potential and hype and transition some of that potential into on-field production. So that's sort of our first topic here, spring observations, talking about that outside linebacker position and why I just find it so fascinating. The next guy I want to focus on a little bit here is Carson Beck. And Carson obviously made a lot of headlines this offseason, you know, with the Lamborghini NIL. We got a chance to talk to him to open spring practice. There's not the same level of intrigue around Carson this spring as there was a season ago, as he's the locked-in starting quarterback. But in getting to watch Carson at practice, it's clear there's a calmness and a confidence in his game that maybe wasn't exactly there a season ago. You watch him throw during practice, and it's just effortless to him. He looks like the best quarterback on Georgia's roster, and it's easy to potentially take that for granted, but it's also worth remembering here. If Georgia is ultimately going to reach its potential this season, I think Carson Beck is going to have to be one of the best players on this team. And that's rarely been a recipe for success for Georgia. Other than certain stretches of the 2022 season, most of Georgia's wins have come because of how dominant they've been on the offensive and defensive line and not really relying on the quarterback all that much. But with turnover at running back, wide receiver, tight end as well, it's going to put a lot on Carson Beck's plate. And based on everything I've seen so far, it looks like Carson is doing the things necessary to take that step forward. We got a chance to talk to Oscar Delp, a guy whose connection is going to be vital for Carson Beck for this coming season. And I thought Oscar said some really interesting things about Carson in terms of how he's developed. And perhaps most importantly, the confidence that he is now playing with that he didn't have this time last season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just he's getting more comfortable every time you're out there with him. And I mean, he looks like he's just having fun just being him, and he's making crazy throws that everyone knew he could always make, but now I think he has like the confidence to finally do that every play. And like he already had that, but I mean, it's just more comfortable, and you know, it's his offense and he's leading it, and he can tell he is.
You think back to the Auburn game last year, and for as much as we talk about Brock Bowers and how much that game meant for him and sort of cementing his legacy, the second half of that game, Carson Beck really took a step forward, and I thought was a different quarterback from the rest of the season for that point on. Played really well for most of the last season, and I think that's a big reason why people see him as an NFL draft quarterback and potentially a Heisman Trophy winner. If he keeps getting better, like I think we've already maybe seen him do this spring and offseason, the ceiling for this quarterback is really, really high, and thus I think the ceiling for this Georgia team could once again be a national championship. We heard from Oscar Delp there a little bit, but that wasn't, and Carson Beck wasn't the only thing that Oscar talked about. That tight end position has gotten a lot of attention with Brock Bowers obviously moving on to the next level. Pierce Spurlin's medical retirement was also a negative note there. And then earlier this week, Kirby Smart revealed that Jaden Riddell is dealing with a hamstring injury and he isn't exactly 100% right now. So with all those absences, this tight end room is looking much thinner than I think some people anticipated. And because of that, I think the Benjamin Urosek addition now makes a lot more sense. Urosek isn't with the team right now as the Stanford transfer won't arrive until this summer, but you see how quickly Georgia has lost some bodies, along with the fact that it is just very young at this position outside of Delp. You can understand why Georgia went out and added an experienced player in Urosek. He didn't have the year he wanted to a season ago as he missed time with injuries, but he's a guy who's played a lot of football out there in the Pac-12, or at least what was left of the Pac-12. And so with him coming into this tight end room, look, Oscar Delp is still clearly a leader and is a guy that I think George is very much counting on, not just in terms of the pass reception game, but also as a blocker and what he's going to be able to do. But Urosek brings an element that, while not exactly Brock Bowers, because no one can be Brock Bowers, I think is pretty similar to what Bowers is able to do from a skill set standpoint. He's going to be able to be split out wide and be versatile in that aspect. And I think, quite frankly, he's going to pair nicely with Oscar Delp. Oscar Delp talked about the ability to play 12 personnel and why that doesn't expect to change this coming season. Delp has briefly met with Urosek, and he's excited to see what their pairing does moving forward. But I found it very interesting what Delp had to say about Urosek and why Georgia ultimately went out and brought him in.
I met him briefly when he was on his visit here, so he seemed like a super cool dude. I'm excited to get to know him. I mean, he's obviously a good player because we wouldn't be recruiting him if he wasn't, so I'm excited to kind of have him in our room and get to share the next season with him.
We're going to have to wait a little while longer to see Urosek on the practice field for Georgia, but I think when you look at everything that has happened with the Georgia tight end room this spring, I think it makes his addition all the more important and potentially all the more impactful for Georgia. And sort of wrapping up our last little observation here, we got a chance to talk to Jared Wilson. For those that don't know, Jared Wilson is going to be Georgia's new starting center this year. We've written a bunch of stories on him, and it was nice to get to hear from him and talk about the leadership lessons that he had learned from Cedric Van Pran and getting to play next to Tate Ratledge. Perhaps more than anyone on the offense, there's more pressure on Jared Wilson in terms of new faces and new starters to this team. He was talking about his upbringing and how he ultimately got to Georgia, the reasons for his why, his mother doing so much for him and his family. And it was very interesting to hear from Wilson. I would encourage you to check out the full video on his YouTube or on the Dog Nation YouTube page. But I think the thing that I found most interesting about Jared Wilson wasn't something he was talking about snapping or the leadership value that Cedric had to this previous team, but it was actually something he said about the Georgia defensive line, or rather former Georgia defensive lineman, and how they helped him and how he is now prepared to be Georgia's starting center. But pay attention closely to what Jared Wilson has to say about former defensive lineman Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter and Devontae Wyatt and a few others here, because I actually think it's very illuminating to the way we talk about another position on this Georgia team.
I had, like, first year I came, I had many of those moments, because that D-line that was here at the time was Trayvon Walker, Jordan Davis, Devontae Wyatt, Jalen Carter, if I didn't mention him, Nolan. It was every single rep you were liable to get your butt kicked, really. I remember one time JD bull rushed me and I heard the whistle. He kept going though. But yeah, that's pretty much, I've had many of those moments. I can't even put it nowhere, tell me any of those moments I've had.
Those moments have undoubtedly helped Wilson be a better center and will help Georgia on the offensive side of the ball this fall. But my question is, with some of the young players on this Georgia offensive line, Daniel Calhoun, Malachi Tolliver, Nyaire Daniels, when it becomes time for them to be starters, are they going to be telling similar stories about this Georgia offensive line? Are we going to be hearing about how tough it was to block Warren Brinson or Nas Stackhouse, Michael Williams, or Joseph Jonah Ajanye? We haven't heard those stories in a while, and it's worth pointing out that Jordan Davis hasn't played for Georgia in two seasons. Jalen Carter was a first-round draft pick in the 2023 NFL draft, while Trayvon Walker went number one overall in the draft prior to that. Georgia needs a better defensive line this coming season. Bringing back guys like Brinson Stackhouse and adding players like Joseph Jonah Ajanye will only help that. We've already talked about it at great length this offseason, but it is a deeper defensive line than it was a season ago. It also now needs to be a more impactful defensive line. And we've talked about before, you need guys like Jordan Hall, Christian Miller to step up and become impact players for Georgia. It's been a while since we've gotten sort of any news stories about Georgia defensive linemen blowing up opposing offensive linemen in practices. The hope is that with the development this season, we see players like that take steps to that, and so that we're no longer hearing stories about how difficult it was to block Jordan Davis or Jalen Carter, but rather players like Christian Miller and Jordan Hall are carving out their own stories that we can hear future offensive linemen tell with a chuckle and a smile on how it helped them become starting caliber offensive linemen for the University of Georgia. So those are our four spring practice observations, sort of wrapping things up there. We're going to have a lot more content out of spring in the coming weeks. Just some housekeeping notes here. Tuesday is the day we get a chance to talk to players and Kirby Smart, and also hear and also potentially see from practice. So that's really the big day that if you're going to tune into Dog Nation and get anything new, those are the days for that. But we're going to have you covered, obviously, with videos, news, notes, anything you could ask, photo galleries as well. Those are all up on the Dog Nation site. So make sure to stay tuned in. You have obviously got Brandon Adams with Dog Nation Daily every Monday through Friday, on the beat with Mike Griffith on Mondays, and then Jeff Sintel doing Before the Hedges on Wednesday. And then obviously this show, Dog Nation Preseason with Kaylee and I, and Kaylee hopefully will be back next week. Sort of wrapping things up here in terms of a final subject. If you're watching this on a Thursday night, I give you kudos because I know that and understand that I'm competing against the NCAA tournament. The tournament began in earnest on Thursday with the first round games tipping off just after noon. But for those that really follow the sport, you were also maybe potentially watching the eyesore that was Virginia basketball losing to Colorado State on Tuesday. It's a March Madness feast, and it is a buffet of endless college basketball. For a true sports fan like myself, it is something to look forward to. And the great thing about this NCAA tournament is that it's got something for everyone, whether it be gambling, your bracket, or just latching on to this year's Cinderella and fun storylines. March Madness is perhaps the best and most American sporting event that we have. And in perhaps true American fashion, we're trying to change it and inevitably potentially make it worse. Greg Sankey spoke recently about the idea of expanding the NCAA tournament to put in more Power Four qualifying teams. When I say Power Four, you think the ACC, the SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12. I'm here to tell you that the NCAA tournament is perfect as is. Even at 68 teams, quite frankly, could stand to lose a few teams and head down to 64. We don't need to be expanding to 96 teams. You know, college basketball's regular season is already devalued as it is because so many people only hyperfixate on the NCAA tournament. For most people, that's understandable, and I myself am someone who likes to follow the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows of the college basketball regular season, even if it has become more diminished over time. You're starting to see something similar happen with college football as the college football playoff has expanded. You've seen some public outcry about it devaluing the regular season. If we expand to 96 teams, all to potentially see a team like Georgia, which went 17-16 this season, get into the NCAA tournament, it's only going to further bastardize what this tournament is all about. It's not about getting the most teams in there or stuffing your face with so much college basketball. It's about celebrating the teams that truly deserve to be there. And further changes to this sport, I don't think are going to help it, but only further hurt it. But hey, if you're interested in making a few more bucks for your power conference teams, as Greg Sankey very clearly seems to be, I can't stop you from doing that. All I can sit here and say is that it's bad for the sport. It's worse for perhaps one of the best American sporting events out there, this NCAA tournament. And ultimately, fans lose at the end of the day. Because quite frankly, as you can look at the NIT, people are already opting out of that. Georgia basketball didn't deserve to be in the NCAA tournament this year. They made incredible strides under Mike White, and I think next year should be a goal to strive towards. But making the NCAA tournament still has to mean something. And if you expand to 96 teams, potentially has been floated out there, I don't think that helps the sport at all. I think it hurts it. And ultimately, college basketball, as we see every March and early April, with one shining moment and teams and Cinderellas and cutting down the nets, is still important. And I would like to see it stay that way. So for the time being, let's keep it at 68 teams. Let's have making the NCAA tournament mean something. Be it winning your conference championship as a MEAC, SWAC, or WCC school, or living and dying on the bubble with every game as most mid-major and potential Power 5 teams do. Look, if March Madness were all chalk and we're all the best power teams, the one seeds would advance to the Final Four every year and they'd win. But it's never that way. You've seen double-digit seeds make it to the Final Four going on great runs. You saw a 16 beat a 1 just last year with Fairleigh Dickinson upsetting Purdue. March Madness is one of, if not my favorite sporting events, because it is both the gluttony, but also the passion that you see in college sports. It's a rare and great combination of the two. I sincerely hope that it doesn't change and ultimately hurt the sport, and thus take away from, in my opinion, what is one of the best sporting events on our calendar. So thank you for allowing me to get on my soapbox there. It's a little different than the anti-St. Patrick's Day diatribe I went on last week, but talking about love of the NCAA tournament, Georgia playing in the NIT this Sunday, they will take on Wake Forest in a second round game. I think these are valuable games for them to continue to advance and ultimately build this program out. But I think the big thing with Georgia basketball right now, they need to make sure that they're able to keep Dylan James, Blue Kane, and Silas Demery. If you bring those three guards back, along with bringing in Asa Newell, and do well in the transfer portal, I think you've got a team that can actually take step forwards in winning more games next season, adding to the strides that they made this coming year. But from Connor Riley, this has been another edition of Dog Nation Preseason. Touched a little bit on spring practice observations, obviously the 2025 SEC schedule, and then ended things there on the NCAA tournament. We will be back next Thursday, thankfully, with Kaylee Manziel hosting once again. So until next Thursday, thank you guys so much for tuning in.